Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Lydia Johnson. Our guest this week is Nebraska Republican Congressman Adrian Smith, who joins us to discuss agricultural trade and the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Agriculture Department issued more than $2 billion in payments to farmers, ranchers, and forest landowners who experienced discrimination from farm loan programs and who did not receive equitable access to federal resources before the start of the Biden administration. The funds come from a program in the Inflation Reduction Act. 43,000 out of the 58,000 who applied will receive some assistance, according to USDA. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says he hopes this will help rebuild trust between farmers and the USDA. A federal appeals court issued an order overturning most of the EPA's 2022 denials of petitions for small refinery exemptions from renewable fuel standard obligations. There were 105 denials issued in 2022, but it's unclear which ones were affected because the opinion was sealed to the public. The American Coalition for Ethanol, Growth Energy, and the Renewable Fuels Association said in a joint statement they are disappointed in the decision. USDA is increasing premium subsidies and expanding the number of crops eligible for the enhanced coverage option. This type of crop insurance was available for 36 crops this year. Almonds, apples, blueberries, grapes, and walnuts will be added in the 2025 crop year. The Risk Management Agency is increasing premium subsidy support for the eco option to 65%. USDA currently subsidizes 52% of the premium for eco yield coverage. Nebraska Republican Representative Adrian Smith is a member of the Ways and Means Committee and chair of the Trade Subcommittee. He is also chair of the newly created Congressional Agricultural Trade Caucus. Representative Smith says lawmakers have a role making sure U.S. farmers remain competitive on the global market.
Well, we need a more strategic, a more aggressive posture from our administration. President Biden and Vice President Harris on trade, they've had us on the sidelines. It should be no surprise at all that other countries, competitive countries, especially in agriculture, are looking to gain market share and take it away from us. That's very hard to get back. But the non-aggressive, the very passive posture that our administration has had on trade, I think is the main cause of the trade deficit that we see in agriculture.
Trade Promotion Authority, or the Fast Track Negotiating Authority, is considered vital for negotiating new trade agreements. Could a Republican Congress pass TPA?
I think we can. I hear from colleagues all the time how they want to see us do more. When it comes to our supply chains, we need to do more. We need to pass MTB, GSP, the Miscellaneous Tariffs Bill, the General System of Preferences as well. These are basically programs and strategies that can help us solidify our supply chains. And so there's work to be done there. We've advanced some legislation, but there's more that needs to be done. But we need the administration as a willing partner on trade. I mean, take Mexico and the biotech corn issue. I mean, they waited more than 2 years to even file a complaint after Mexico issued their decree. That is inexplicable in my estimation, and we need to see the administration do much more.
Former President Donald Trump and the Republican Party platform are proposing up to a 60% tariff on goods imported from China. Ag groups have told us repeatedly that they're worried about a trade war. What are your thoughts, and what kind of support should Congress provide to farmers if there is retaliation?
Well, I'm not a fan of tariffs, but they need to be a tool in the toolbox. And I think our trading partners, when they want to basically levy tariffs on us that are tilting the out of balance, that's very problematic. So when you look at the Trump administration and what their trade agenda was, it was so comprehensive that leveling the playing field was clearly a priority, and we were able to do that. President Trump was able to do that. When you have a more comprehensive approach, you can work through some of these things. But when you have such a passive posture like the Biden-Harris administration has right now, this it's problematic. And I believe farmers and ranchers are paying the price for bad policies and bad administration coming from President Biden and certainly Vice President Harris.
As you mentioned, tariffs are a necessary tool in the toolbox. What kind of support should Congress provide to farmers if there is retaliation?
Well, I believe that agriculture has a lot of strong voices in both the House and the Senate. I'm certainly willing to step up all the time, and I advocate for agriculture and trade all the time. We want to be strategic, let's face it. I think actually our trading partners expect a much more aggressive approach from the United States of America than what they've seen and what they've observed over the last 3.5 years. The numbers speak for themselves when it comes to agriculture and the trade deficit that U.S. agriculture faces. And so I see this as an opportunity that I hope we can have a change in administration, elevate the issue of trade a lot more than what we've seen over the last 3.5 years. And I think everyone can benefit. And not just our own producers, certainly, that's my priority. We also have the opportunity to bring calm in the markets and establish expectations and stability and predictability that encourages investment.
Ag exports to China have been falling. What other markets do you think could make up for that?
Africa. Africa is the fastest growing population on a continent. The demographics, the youngest demographic of any continent, especially in contrast to Asia. There are critical minerals that can be helpful in Africa as well. You know, President Trump and his team teed up a trade agreement with Kenya, a great opportunity as a first step for more trade across the very large continent of Africa. And the Biden team is basically unwound it, saying they'll have discussions, but they don't want to talk about tariffs. I think that the current administration has taken us backward as it relates to trade policy and actually promoting exports of our U.S.-made, U.S.-grown, U.S.-produced goods and services as well.
We'll be right back with more from Congressman Adrian Smith right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Spring floods, fall floods, there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. One of former President Trump's ideas to offset the cost of tax cuts is to impose tariffs on other countries. Congressman Adrian Smith says tariffs can be used strategically, but they should not be relied on as a source of revenue.
Well, I don't see tariffs as a reliable source of revenue. So we have to be careful there and not budget on something that, if it is a reliable source of revenue, then that's just a tax on the middle class. Or especially low income. So when I say that tariffs can be a tool in the toolbox, I think they can be strategically placed so as to send the message to other countries that we are very serious. But to rely on them as a source of revenue, I really hesitate to think that that's wise because it ends up just being another tax on the American people.
Do you think that's really the best way to reduce the federal debt?
The best way to reduce our debt is to bend the curve on spending, grow our economy. We've seen that good tax policy can help grow our economy, and we actually reduced taxes in 2017, and an increase in revenue came to the federal government. So that is a scenario where, you know, more people have the ability to pay taxes. That's a good thing. And when you look at some of the large corporations, I know of a U.S. multinational corporation that paid significantly more in taxes from 2017 to 2023, and they liked the policies that we have. So it actually increased revenue, and yet they were able to invest in more productivity, more efficiency, invest in their employees. We know that the labor market is so tough right now. We want companies to be able to invest in their people too. So let's not restrict and prohibit and this and that because someone in Washington, D.C. thinks that the federal government knows best. Let's empower investors in the economy, customers, consumers. Customers and consumers, they're the best drivers of our economy more than anything else. And let's not stand in the way of what is best for consumers. Let's make sure they have the freedom and they have the opportunity to engage in the economy the way they would wish, and a lot of other things fall in place.
The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expires at the end of 2025. What are the benefits to farmers with the existing legislation, and how will the election shape your ability to maintain those cuts?
Yeah, well, expensing provisions, I think, are key for agriculture, all small businesses. That expensing provision is very important. I worked hard in 2017 to maintain full deductibility for agriculture, real estate taxes, and business taxes. There was a proposal to eliminate all deductibility of ag land property taxes. And we knew that would be very problematic for Ag America, as I like to call it. And so there are various, a broad base tax policy with a lower rate does great things in the economy. And that's what we did in 2017. And say, I don't think the federal government should be in the business of picking all these winners and losers on such a narrow basis. Let's focus on growing the economy as a whole, and then encouraging producers to invest in their own productivity as well. Now that can deliver very positive results.
Republicans have been talking a lot about the problem of the growing federal debt, as you mentioned earlier. Will that make it harder to extend the expiring tax cuts next year?
Well, there will be a very vigorous debate on, you know, whether tax cuts should be paid for. You know, a clean definition is hard to get there because we know that, as we've seen with the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that it actually increased revenue. So let's make sure that in this effort to have a balanced budget, that we don't actually hurt ourselves by increasing taxes to the point it would be a stranglehold on the economy. Let's move forward in a responsible manner that brings about better policy, that encourages growth, and so that ultimately we can grow that economy. Bend the curve on spending. That is a huge issue. You know, we've not done what we need to do in Congress as it relates to the spending portion and the biggest drivers of our debt, I should add, as it relates to spending. So we've got a lot of work to do, but a growing economy and encouraging investment, I think, is key along the way.
Wonderful. Representative Smith, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion. But first, R. Jake Sikowski has the impact on tax liabilities if tax cuts expire in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Higher taxes are ahead for farmers if provisions in the 2017 Tax Cut and Jobs Act expire. This graph shows the average increase in tax liabilities for various sizes of family farm households if this change were to occur. USDA economists estimate that very large farms would see an average tax liability increase of more than $27,000, an increase of nearly 6%. Tax liabilities for mid-sized farms would increase by 14%. Or more than $4,900. Low sales farm households would see an increase of $713, or 11%. The increases would be a result of increased tax rates and reduced deductions. Unless Congress acts, Americans will face higher and more complicated taxes starting in 2026, as current provisions expire at the end of 2025. For AgriPulse, I'm Jacob Zukowski.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. This week's panel is going to focus on trade. We're joined by Phil Karstein with OFW Law and T.A. Hawks with Monument Advocacy. T.A., we'll start with you. Former President Trump is calling for a 60% tariff on goods imported from China. Ag groups have told us that they're worried about a trade war. Are they wrong to be concerned?
Yeah, well, we saw this in the first Trump administration, where his advisors and the president himself used tariffs as a tool to bring countries to bear on market conditions. And that did have a big impact on imports to the country, exports, retaliatory tariffs from other countries. And I think it is something that, you know, he is the former president in his campaign for president again has really focused on reintroducing more tariffs. That in some ways, you know, the Biden administration hasn't taken off over these last few years.
And Phil, turning to you, if those tariffs go into effect with the Trump presidency, what other markets should the U.S. look to? What countries are the best prospects for replacing some of our sales to China?
Well, I think, I think those tariffs are a really big risk, not just for what they mean in terms of retaliation, but sort of overall inflationary pressure on the economy as a whole. So I think we need to be really, really cognizant of those. In terms of new opportunities, you know, the USDA announced the Regional Ag Promotion Program, which is specifically designed to sort of reduce our dependence on current big export markets, which is the EU and China. And so I know a lot of the ag cooperators out there are working hard to figure out how do they diversify, not put all our eggs in one basket. I know folks who are looking very closely at India, and people sort of going all over the world to scour new opportunities.
Ag groups would like to see new free trade agreements, but the Biden administration will not negotiate them, and Republicans are moving away from a free trade policy as well. How is the U.S. going to reverse the growing ag trade deficit?
Well, you're right. It feels like ever since about 2016, the sand has really shifted under traditional trade negotiations. And so I think there's going to have to be a lot of work one-on-one in individual markets to grow those opportunities. And that's what we see reflected in the rural ag or the regional ag promotion program. There's also a big effort in the Farm Bill right now to increase resources available for the market access program, which a lot of ag exporters use to grow markets. And so we'll see how that goes.
T.A., turning back to you, a president can't really finalize a new trade deal without trade promotion authority, which means that Congress can't amend an agreement. Do you think a Republican Congress would renew that authority?
It's a good question. And a lot, to Phil's point, a lot has changed in the last, you know, decade or two around trade policy in D.C. And, you know, even the last times that trade promotion authority has been granted to the administration, whoever was in control, it's not an easy thing. And so I think, you know, market development and expanding opportunities abroad are the best interest of farmers and producers here in the U.S., but it does seem a little bit hard to see how we get there with shifting sands, as you mentioned.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Spring floods, fall floods,
there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. T.A. Hawks with Monument Advocacy says the Market Access Program and the Foreign Market Development Program are important tools for helping expand export markets. He expects bipartisan agreement over funding both programs in the Farm Bill.
Yeah, MAP and FMD are essential to, you know, grow export markets and opportunities for farmers and producers here in the U.S. And I think that's why you've seen such a focus on that in the Farm Bill. You have broad bipartisan support for doubling MAP and FMD funding, and I think that's, you know, as we continue to negotiate a farm bill on the Hill, I think that's an area where you'll continue to see bipartisan agreement.
Phil, rounding out with you, the DNC is just a few short weeks away. What are some of the differences that we might see between the different parties' trade policy? What could we see from a potential Trump presidency versus a Harris presidency in the trade policy space?
Well, you know, nobody knows exactly what Harris is, Vice President Harris's administration is going to do. I would expect not a wild departure from the Biden administration. Where Trump is concerned, you know, we've got Project 2025 as sort of a roadmap. And in some ways, I think Project 2025, the trade section especially, is broken into two parts. One talks about 60% tariffs on China and 10% on most other imports. And the other has a more traditional Republican outlook. So it's kind of like where trade is concerned, Project 2025 has a bit of a multiple personality disorder.
And what are some of the specific things that we will see in the Democratic Party's trade platform?
Democratic platform, you know, it's I think there's a lot of fast and furious work being done on that right now because we have had such a seismic shift in the last 10 days or so. So I'm going to wait and see. I am hopeful that it addresses not just farm policy, but rural policy overall, because as you know, farm policy is, or agricultural policy is just one component of a rural policy. It's an important one, but it's not the only one. You know, my parents lived in rural America their whole lives. They never cashed a subsidy check or got a crop insurance premium rebate or subsidy. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into rural America that goes beyond what we think of in traditional ag policy.
Wonderful. Well, TA and Phil, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers right after this. But first, RJ Sikowski has the agriculture export value of states in this week's Map It Out.
The United States exported over $188 billion worth of agriculture products in 2022. This map shows U.S. exports by state. California is the largest ag exporter with almost $25 billion in export value, followed by Iowa with nearly $17 billion. Illinois with almost $14 billion, and Minnesota and Nebraska, both with about $10 billion. Alaska and Rhode Island are the states with the least amount of exports, with nearly $21 million and $33 million in export value, respectively. U.S. export value has grown almost 27% in the last 5 years, with 34 states producing over $1 billion in exported commodity goods. For AgriPulse, I'm Jacob Zukowski.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Both chambers of Congress will be out of session for August recess. They'll reconvene the second week of September. USDA's monthly dairy products report comes out on Monday. And I'll be on the road next week, bringing you the show and perspective from ag leaders from the Minnesota Farm Fest. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more at agripulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is agripulse.com.